If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
He wins, he takes the car. I win, I take his finger. Is that so strange?
Leiningen, you're up against a monster 20 miles long and 2 miles wide, 40 square miles of agonizing death. You can't stop it.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Round up the usual suspects.
Silent Breed is people!
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast.
Paleo Cinema Podcast is a fortnightly podcast about movies. All kinds of movies. Crime movies, science fiction movies, horror movies, movies with cool actors you've never heard of in them, movies where CGI stands for criminals, girls and ice picks, classic movies, cult movies and any other movie Terry wants to rant about as long as the movie is more than 20 years old. You can find the podcast website at paleo-cinema.com. The voicemail number is 206-350-5440. Or you can email or send MP3 voicemails to cultguru@gmail.com. That's cult with a K. This podcast usually contains swearing and is probably not safe for work unless you work in a brothel or a David Mamet film.
Hi and welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast 96. My name is Terry Frost and this time I'm doing something a little bit different. Now I say that about every second or third podcast, but this time I kind of mean it. And I am recording this in my garden. So if you hear extraneous noise outside or anything like that, there's a reason. I'm in the garden, I've got the trestle table that my father-in-law and I made with all the gear set up on it. I'm going to get Sal to guest on this one a little bit later. But in general, I'm just chilling out. If you hear some noise from the breeze, that's okay. I've checked the weather radar, so I'm not going to get rained on here in the foreseeable future. And yeah, just going to shoot the shit. I did have an arrangement to have a guest on, but the guest overcommitted himself with other podcast, which is perfectly fine, and we will be doing the thing next week. But this time around, I just thought I'd chill out. I did put a shout out for people who wanted to be on this podcast. Didn't get enough of a response, which is probably not the way to go about it. But yeah, so it is. It's not sunny, but it's cloudy but bright out here, and it's the tail end of summer. I've got my garden just the way I want it, apart from plants. And yeah, just thought I'd shoot the shit and enjoy the hell out of doing Paleo Cinema in a slightly different way, which is always interesting. And I'm back inside now because it got a bit hot outside, and heat and electrical equipment don't always go together. Let's get back on track with the normal bits at the start of a podcast, and we'll have a look at what I have been watching. Now, I did watch some more Night Gallery episodes of Rod Serling's The Night Gallery, which is always a bit of fun. I think I watched all of season two. Let's see. I'm saying I'm a lot, aren't I? Mimic. I saw Mimic, the Guillermo del Toro movie with Mira Sorvino and a few other people in it. It's got Giancarlo Giannini doing a very good job in there as well. Yeah, Chinese Sex Under the Streets of New York. You got to love it. I've heard a lot of people criticize the film, but I kind of do like it. I think it's got some unusual pacing. I don't think it's necessarily bad pacing, but they've got some unusual pacing. And the thing I like about it too is they're not scared to kill children. There's a big taboo in most exploitation cinema these days in America that you don't kill kids. This movie did. Now, I'm not in favour across the board of children dying, but I think that if you're going to kill grown-ups in a film, why should kids be exempt? So I watched that. Alligator. I did see John Sayles' Alligator, which is one of the great fun 1980, I think it's from 1980, giant lizard movies starring Robert Forster. And yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. It's got that perfect kind of structure of people start disappearing and then the authorities try to hush it up, but a rogue cop with a cute female scientist go and find out what's really happening, that kind of thing. And I do like Robert Forster in films. He's quite good. And he's now appearing in Alcatraz too, a series which is still trying to find its legs, I think. But having him in an episode always makes it a bit more interesting. Sam Neill's not bringing his A game to this one yet, but we'll see how we go with that series. But Alligator's pretty good. And I look at Alligator slightly differently after I swam with the crocodiles last year. Seeing a movie like this and then relating it directly to a real-life experience makes it just that little bit more interesting and a little bit more fun. So if you ever get a chance to hang out with giant ambush predators, my tip is be safe. My other tip is it will enhance your movie viewing. Okay, the best movie I watched in the last 2 weeks from an enjoyment point of view was a very Harold and Kumar Christmas. Now, I know a lot of people don't like the Harold and Kumar films, but I love them. I think they're just lightly transgressive in a very kind of cool way. This one's got a lot of funny things in it. It takes the piss out of the fact that it's in 3D. I didn't see the 3D version, I saw the 2D version, but you can definitely see the piss takes on 3D. It has one of the great silly things I've seen recently, which is Danny Trejo from Machete wearing a big fluffy Christmas sweater with a Christmas tree on it and getting fully into the Christmas spirit. I think he's got a great future in comedy. He may end up taking the piss out of his persona in the same way that De Niro did with a few of his films. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I do like the bit at the end where Kumar's wife says, "Don't give up dope smoking, just use my urine when you have the tests." That was pretty cool. Anyway, yeah, so what else was American Grindhouse. I did see American Grindhouse, which is a documentary very much in the style of Not Quite Hollywood, Mark Hartley's documentary made here in Australia, and it looks at American Grindhouse cinema in the same way that Not Quite Hollywood looked at exploitation. And it is slightly not as good as Not Quite Hollywood, but it's still pretty good. And they still have some good interviews with a bunch of different people there. The usual suspects are in there. Landis, I think, is in there. And Landis is in any documentary about American exploitation cinema ever made. And, yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's a good companion piece to Not Quite Hollywood. And it's worth your time and locating a copy of. That's really it. I haven't been popping everything onto the Mizzo, so I've forgotten a lot of the stuff that I watched. Just in general, noodling around TV and watching things. And while I'm talking about television, congratulations to that fine Australian comic character actress, Magda Szubanski, for coming out both in favour of gay marriage and coming out as a lesbian. She has a lot of credibility in Australia. You might have seen her in things like Babe, Pig in the City and that kind of thing. But she's kind of cultural icon in Australia, and it meant a lot to a lot of people I know for her to come out both in favour of gay marriage and come out as gay herself. And good on her. That's all I've got to say on that one. The other thing I should say too is that this weekend we commemorate the 70th anniversary of the Japanese bombing of Darwin, where 427 people lost their lives. And because I have a personal relationship with Darwin now, I kind of been reading up on the history of it and how the Australian authorities totally fucked up the northern defences of Australia during World War II by, once again, listening to the British. So here's my other tip for world leaders. If you ever get into a world war, don't listen to the POMs. They are only looking after themselves. So that's about it for what I've been watching. I'm going to take another break now, and when I get back, I'm going to have a little chat with Sal.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work, you save, you worry so.
but you can't take your dough when you go, go, go. Stokey, repeating, it's the berries. The strongest oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loaned. So how can you lose what you've never owned? Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh at it all. Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work and you save and you worry so, but you can't take your dough when you go, 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 go. Just keep repeating, it's the berries, the berries, the berries, the berries. The strongest oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loaned. So how can you lose what you never own? Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh. Live and laugh. Life is just a great big bowl of cherries.
That was the High Lows with Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries. If you check out the YouTube video on that, you'll see that there's somebody walking around behind them. I'll try to post it on the podcast blog, just so you can see who it is walking behind the High Lows when they sing that. Yeah, I've actually got a special guest here today, here in Paleo Cinema Land, and that is Sal. She's decided to join me, as has Jack the Cat, who's sitting on the table. How are you, Sal?
I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Frost. You?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, so what have you been watching lately on TV or movies and things like that?
I've been sticking to my favourite genre of really bad CGI and stupid monster movies.
And you've now been monstered by a cat.
Yes, Kitten Kong has joined me. He wants to sit on my lap.
Thanks, Jack. I can see right up his ass from this viewpoint. It wasn't nice at all. Yeah, so you've been watching the really bad things like the Asylum movies. You like those?
Yes, I do. And I was very excited to find the Roger Corman collection at JB Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say products on Paleo?
Yes, you are. We're not at the ABC. It's only when I'm doing the radio gig that you're not allowed to do that.
A bit of a scare then.
No, that's cool.
But yes, I found the Roger Corman DVD collection, which was very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I watched Sharktopus from that.
Mm-hmm.
That is an excellent movie.
Yeah.
But it's not old enough to be spoken about on Paleo Cinema.
That's okay. We'll make an exception for you.
Because I'm not as old as your listeners.
That's not true. I've got listeners of all sorts of ages. I've got young ones and old ones.
And what's the average age?
I don't know, but are you grinding your feet into the dirt for a reason?
Yes,
sorry. You're making noise there.
I'm nervous.
That's okay. There's nothing to be nervous about. Everybody, put in feedback telling Sal there's nothing to be nervous about being on the podcast.
Are you serious?
So what gets me is you say that Wizard of Oz is your favourite movie ever, right?
Yes.
We've discussed this before on the podcast. You haven't watched it in a few years, have you?
No, just because it's your favourite doesn't mean you have to constantly revisit it.
Oh, I'll revisit my favourite movies a lot. But then I'm weird, aren't I?
Yeah. You're a cinephile. Yeah. I'm not a cinephile.
Okay.
I have other interests.
Yes, you do.
So there you go.
Yeah, so tell people what you watch on television. Besides, you know, tell them about the old English comedies you love.
Yeah, the old English comedies. Well, I'm pretty much up to season 14, I think it is, of the two Ronnies.
Yeah, which is Ronnie Corbett and Ronnie Barker.
Yes. And then I've watched some Kenny Everett recently.
Mm-hmm.
And some Jasper Carrot.
Okay.
That's it. And then I went mob Jimmy Carr. I went mad over Jimmy Carr for a little while there too.
You missed out on something this morning.
What?
Reeves and Mortimer doing their Shooting Stars show. It's on Comedy Channel. And I know you love Vic Reeves.
Oh, yeah, only when he did Dizzy because he looked like a vampire.
No, well, he has vampire teeth in this one. He had vampire teeth in when he was doing Shooting Stars where they have a quiz show with celebrities on it.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you're big on the vampire thing, aren't you?
I am big on the vampire thing except for Twilight. Twilight is an abomination to the entire vampire legend.
You don't watch the Vampire Diaries, do you?
No. That's another abomination. Isn't that the one that looks like 90210 for vampires?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit.
Yeah, I think we tried that one, but that one was a bit dismal.
Okay, fair enough.
But yes, I do like my vampires, and vampires aren't meant to be nice and sparkly.
What are they meant to be?
Well, they can be nice. I mean, Angel was nice. I do like Angel.
Mm-hmm.
They are allowed to have some sort of nicety to them, but they're not supposed to sparkle.
No, because that makes them into fairies.
Correct. And they're not meant to like Italian food either because of the use of garlic.
Who likes Italian food? Which vampires like Italian food?
No, so they're not meant to. That's good because of garlic.
Okay. So they're not like meant to like a whole bunch of things as well. They're not allowed to have a bowl of Vietnamese soup or something because it's got garlic in it.
Correct. Or anything you cook, really.
I cook without garlic a lot.
You cook with a lot of garlic too. Everything seems to have to have a like crushed a garlic thing. All of a sudden.
No, you just say that like it's a bad thing.
Should I tell everybody what I first thought of you when I first met you?
Yeah, go on. Have a bit of fun with it.
Okay. Well, the reason I stayed with Terry was after when I first met him, I thought he looked like a vampire, and so I thought he was meant to be the one for me.
Yes, and I stayed with you because you look like a sucker.
And I still am.
Yeah, you are.
But don't take that in the wrong context. Yeah.
So what's it like living with a podcaster who also does radio gigs? It's a bit of a strain at times, isn't it?
A bit of a strain. I'm actually thinking of starting a support group called Movie Widows or Podcast Widows because I do feel sometimes that I am single again. So all you single guys out there, if you want to contact me, you can reach me through Cold Guru.
They will.
Terry will have to approve it, of course. But I do sometimes, I'm not a dependent or a dependable, hang on, what's the word I'm looking for? A needy.
A needy.
It's probably more the word.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not a needy wife because I'd never see you.
Well, you do see me sometimes.
No, look, I'll give everybody a view of our nights. We come home from work, I go in the front room, he goes in the other room, and we watch our own things. And if we communicate, sometimes it's through Facebook or email.
I'm sure that a lot of people can identify with that, though. It's the 21st century. I mean, why actually get off your ass when you don't have to?
Because you should be wanting to spend time with your beloved wife, especially when she's as beautiful as me.
Well, I do, and I do. Okay, we'll leave the domestics away. So is there anything upcoming that you're looking forward to seeing in movies?
Abe Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That one would be an obvious choice, wouldn't it?
Soon to be followed by the sequel, Jimmy Carter, Vampire Hunter.
Oh, God.
Or Jimmy Carr, Werewolf 5.
No, it's Jimmy Carter.
Sorry,
Jimmy Carr's the English comedian,
yeah,
honey.
Jimmy Carter, Werewolf for Hire.
Oh, dear me, dear me.
Bill Clinton, Pussy Hound.
Oh, my God. Do you need me here at all, Carlo?
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You talk while I have a sip of drinks.
You can hear the fizz in the background. So, if anyone wants gossip on Terry too, send through a PM and I'll let you know. I'll answer it for you.
What kind of gossip could they possibly have on me?
Questions you get?
Common questions I get? What are you doing for the next podcast?
Okay, well, what he's doing for the next podcast is probably 2 weeks' worth of research, which involves him sitting in the main TV area watching movies and ignoring me whilst I sit in the front room and cry.
You sit in the front room and cry. You drama queen asshole.
And also shirking on his responsibilities whilst...
That's not true.
And neglecting our children, which of course are the cats, because we don't...
One of whom has fallen asleep on the table out here. I'll post a photo on the podcast website of the setup on the table out here. We've got a garden, but we don't have plants. We've got a few herbs in the little herb patch, but that's about it. We're going to wait for the cooler weather to actually do the planting.
Correct. Correct. And what other questions do you get there, dear?
What else do I get? How do you put up with Sally? That's a good one.
You never get that one.
Okay.
It'd more be like, how does she put up with you?
Well, I think she does a pretty good job.
I think
up
I do too.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're nearly hitting our 11th anniversary.
Yeah, we are. 11th anniversary in March, isn't it? Of when we met.
Yes, March 10.
March 10.
Well, that's for when we went. That's not our wedding anniversary. That's our when we met anniversary. Yep. Because, yeah, that's a lot longer than our wedding. Yeah.
11 years is a fairly long time. You do get used to people after 11 years and you kind of know them very well, don't you?
Well, I've still got no idea who you are and what you do.
I'm a man of mystery. What can I tell you? I'm an enigma wrapped in a mystery wrapped in clothing.
You do. And I think that's why we can settle into being serious for a moment. That's why we can settle into you doing this and the radio and all of that stuff, because we do need that time apart as well, as much as being together.
You kind of negotiate that. There's joint time and there's time for yourself as well, which I'm not saying fortunately, but because we don't have real children, we do have that space, and you do need to negotiate that. Having kids puts a totally different dynamic on it.
Yes.
But for us, just having that spare time for ourselves and to follow our own interests
is
really, really useful.
Yes, and occasionally they cross over.
They cross over a fair bit. We go to the movies together sometimes when there's a mutually suitable movie. So there's nothing really upcoming apart from those ones that you're looking forward to. You're going to go see The Avengers with me?
Oh, if I have to.
Going, it's really good podcasting, by the way. But
I'm sort of weary because you dragged me along to see Sherlock Holmes 2 and I wasn't that excited by that one.
Why blame me? I didn't make the fucking movie. I just took you to it.
I like the first one so much better. I didn't see a point for a second one.
I think maybe a second viewing might help too. I'm not sure you were in the right headspace at the time to really enjoy it as much as you should have.
What headspace do you need to be able to enjoy Robert Downey Jr.?
Slightly drug-fucked and hungover.
Okay, right. Yeah, well, sorry.
I
forgot the drugs.
You did enjoy Stephen Fry naked, though.
I did. I have something about cuddly gay men.
Yeah. Naked gay men, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so what else are you looking forward to watching? You look at trailers a lot on the Apple trailers.
I do. But I haven't, honestly, for a while, because I've been stuck into my TV shows. I'm trying to catch up on all of them, which are ones that you won't watch, so.
Well, yes, that's good.
Like my CSI.
Yeah, you just like that for the gory bits, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
And it has to be the original CSI, none of these offshoots. Oh,
well, like, you know, CSI, Sandusky, Ohio, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But I do have some movies I have to catch up on, which are my terrible CGI ones, like Sand Sharks.
Okay.
I haven't watched that one yet, but I'm looking forward to that one. Okay. Sharks in the Sand, come on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pull it across my copy of Harold and Kumar Christmas for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is funny. I think you'll cack a bit with that one.
I don't know.
It's got all the right kind of jokes for you.
Which are?
Well, you've got that English heritage, so, you know, bum jokes are usually pretty good. Dick jokes are pretty good. Slap and tickle jokes are pretty good for you. Anything along that line of witty and sophisticated humour.
Oh, yes. Witty and sophisticated. How sweet. Yes. Maybe I should watch a carry-on marathon.
Yeah, maybe you should watch some carry-on movies. And, you know, you'll be running around a place at work and at home quoting Charles Hawtrey and Kenneth Williams. Hopefully not too much Sid James, but yeah.
Oh, who's the one with the big tits? Oh, my God.
There's a few of them.
The one that he married. The one that he married.
Who married?
Sid James.
He didn't marry her. He just fucked her.
Oh, well, excuse
Barbara Windsor.
Me. How romantic.
Barbara Windsor.
Well, they were together till he died.
Well, not really. They separated, but they were still close friends.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah.
This is why I don't do a movie podcast. I know nothing.
You do know. Since when was that a preclusion for doing a movie podcast? I mean, leaving aside the usual suspects I mentioned at the end of the podcast, I have heard a couple of movie podcasts where you want to throw the iPod across the room and say, learn your fucking craft before you even make an attempt at it. I'm sorry if that offends anybody. Actually, I'm not sorry if that offends anybody. I revel in the fact that might offend some people. But knowing a bit about what you're talking about doesn't hurt. And
yeah,
if you can't know a bit about what you're talking about, being able to fake it with a great deal of skill is the other option. Oh, we've got the giggles now, have we?
My mind's gone off on a completely different tangent for a completely different podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a bit of that last night. I was talking to some people who run a couple of science fiction clubs, and they were talking about how the clubs are dying and things like that, and how they're going to have to amalgamate the Star Trek club with the Star Wars club and that sort of thing. And I said to them, do a podcast, you know, get your audience there, get new members in from doing a podcast, network with other podcasts, do that.
How can Star Wars die when bloody Lucas keeps re-frigging releasing him?
Yeah, I think that's put off a lot of people. The fact that
good, they've woken up to themselves.
What I did say to this guy last night is that the unfortunate thing about Star Wars, apart from the fact that it's Star Wars, is that it's become an etch-a-sketch for George Lucas. Every now and then he can just shake up the little box and redo it. And even though he might find that endlessly fascinating, I'm not sure that the audience does particularly. And I think that Star Wars, when people think Star Wars, they think the more recent ones, the last three.
Sad.
In a lot of ways, and nobody likes them.
No.
I mean, yeah, I've heard apologists for them. But even dyed-in-the-wool Star Wars fans really don't like them. And Lucas, living in his little Marin County kingdom, doesn't really have his finger on the pulse of what people want. He's become the mainstream, and new things never come from the mainstream. They always come from the edges of things. They come from people around the fringe. They come from the people doing Attack the Block and films like that to really revitalise the genre, or you know, found footage movies like your Blair Witch Project and your Paranormal Activity.
I do have a few of them I've been watching recently. There was the Australian one, The Tunnel, which was released free download for a
while. Yeah, the Tunnel's an interesting one where they basically crowdsourced it and crowdsourced the funding for it. And, and that's an interesting way of going about it too.
But they're becoming very popular. I can put up with so much of them, but then it gets a bit samey to me.
Yeah, I mean, the shaky cam puts me off a little bit on them. I mean, unless you've got a really clear narrative. I think something like District 9, which did a little bit of the found footage type of shooting, is really good. But I think what you've got to have is that really, really strong through line of plot to hold together the found footage stuff.
Well, the Tunnel sort of... You haven't watched that one yet, have you?
I do want to watch it because I do know a little bit about the tunnels under Sydney, and I have seen a little bit of them.
Well, the Tunnel sort of did it in a District 9 sense. It was a found footage, but then they were interviewing the people, the actor or the characters.
Around found footage.
So it wasn't just pure found footage. So you had the break from all of it. And that one wasn't a bad one, actually. I quite enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea of... I like frame stories as well, where they start the story off and then go into flashback with it. I mean, The Bad and the Beautiful, my favourite movie of all time, in a sense, is a frame story. And the Man Who Would Be King with Sean Connery and Michael Caine, playing the military guys in India who found a kingdom in northern India.
Yep.
That's, in a sense, a frame story as well, because it's being narrated by Peachy, the character played by Michael Caine, to Rudyard Kipling. So frame stories are interesting for that reason. You know that at least one of the characters survived, but the narration's from their viewpoint, and you get that clear idea that the narration is from their viewpoint right from the start. Which is kind of a nice way to do it. I mean, not everybody likes that kind of story, and I've heard a few critiques of some... If it's done badly, it's done badly. But frame stories are an interesting way to go about it, and it takes you back to that storytelling origin of you know, the way we do media. People sitting around a fire telling a story. Which is one of the earliest things human beings did, and the frame story directly relates back to that in a really nice way.
Very true.
Okay, so nothing else you want to say to the audience, to people all around this clay and granite planet who are listening to your voice?
No.
Okay, thanks for that. Come on, well, in that case we'll just end it there. But
I just want to apologise because I was brought in last minute because he couldn't find anyone else.
You were not. I was planning to do it.
I'm so unprepared for this. Woke up an hour ago and I'm in front of a mic. So I do apologise.
Who was it who suggested you be the person on here?
I have no idea.
You did in the car last night.
Oh, yeah, that was joking.
Okay, well, I took the joke seriously. I'm sorry.
I actually said that I would be happy to come along and sing some theme songs.
No, but I've heard you singing, Bubs. So you're going to put audiences off.
Yes, and what was your words? No, we want people to be listening.
Yes, that's true.
So I can do a Whitney Houston medley if you
like. No, you're not going to do a Whitney Houston medley. Don't do that. It's my podcast, and the last thing I want is junky singing on my podcast. Thank you very much for coming along, Sal, and being part of it again.
Anytime.
Okay.
Maybe next time I come on, we can have a bit of warning, and if people want to ask me any questions, they can.
Yeah, well, as long as it doesn't involve, you know, questions about my junk, I'm happy for you to answer them.
Anything you want to know about his junk, I'm happy to answer too.
Thank you very much, Sal.
You're welcome, T.
Okay, catch you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and now we're back inside. Sorry about the sound quality on the cell thing. The wind caught her mic a bit. I'm going to have to get one of those little foofy things to put on the end of that microphone. Oh, I should mention that I did watch one other movie recently. When I mentioned the movies, I forgot it. I watched The Naked Jungle last night again with a group of people at the Melbourne Science Fiction Club. It's really interesting at the moment because in Australia, if you go to one of the big department stores, Big W, you can pick up a copy of The Naked Jungle in dump bins for $5. So if anybody's around Australia and you want a copy of it, there's your opportunity. And I like The Naked Jungle. I like William Conrad in it playing the local commissioner. I like the fact that Charlton Heston's such a tight-ass virgin in it. In it, I like Eleanor Parker playing off him. Eleanor Parker, if you want to see a good Eleanor Parker movie, there's like an women in prison film called Caged with her in it. It's a film noir almost. It's from the very early 1950s, and she got an Academy Award nomination for it. I really should do that in a podcast, and I'd like to do it with somebody else at some stage because that is one fucking tough movie. Really is full bore for a Hollywood film of its time. And it's a really interesting piece of cinema, and I liked Eleanor Parker before I saw Cage, but I just got more of a grasp of how good an actor she was by watching Caged. I'd known her from a few things, one of which was, of course, Naked Jungle, but a movie called Eye of the Cat from the late 1960s, starring Michael Sarrazin and Gail Honeycutt, set in San Francisco. Quite a good little thriller. But I've actually got the movie poster for that one. But, Eleanor Parker in that's great, and I love the ants, and I like the kind of slightly dodgy matte paintings they have behind some scenes in the movie. But I do like... I think jungle adventure films are a really cool genre in a way. I did talk about Secret of the Incas, of course, with Charlton Heston in it also, and on a previous podcast. I like those kind of things. There's a movie called Hivero with Fernando Lamas and Brian Keith in it, where they're in the South American jungle and up against Hivero Indians and things like that. There are any number of those kind of films in the 1950s. So, of course, there was Tarzan and Jungle Jim and all those sort of things. But I do like a good jungle adventure pick, and they don't do enough of them these days, really, to... it's one of those genres that has gone by the wayside, like the Arabian Nights adventures. Nobody does those anymore either because they're kind of politically incorrect and... might be culturally insensitive to certain people, but the 1950s Hollywood was making tons. Actually, from the 1930s, I think it was 1935 when Ronald Coleman and Marlene Dietrich were in the original version of Kismet, and of course it dates back even into the teens with things like Douglas Fairbanks in the original Thief of Baghdad and movies like that. That's another genre I like that doesn't get any love these days. And really, I mean, apart from Prince of Persia, which was a shit film, and the most amazing thing in it was how consistently Jake Gyllenhaal kept an English accent, which he adopted for no particular good reason apart from being a smarty pants. But, it doesn't get a lot of love these days, and I do like that. Let me know what genres you like that don't get any love. There are forgotten genres. Not too many Westerns coming out these days. And the ones that do, they tend to be kind of neo-realist, in a sense. And they're all about the kind of grit and the ugliness and the psychopathic nature of Western movies, but there's not that kind of... You know, what you need is something like
The Magnificent Seven would be a good example. Something like an Ocean's 11 Western would be very interesting to do, where they get together a whole bunch of people. It could be very steampunky. And if people want to use this idea, please do, but send me a ticket to the premiere of a kind of steampunk Ocean's 11 done as a Western. Or even in the Australian Gold Rush days, it would have been really cool. You could have had somebody with a steam-powered robot. Now, as we all know, I'd love to have great and enormous and all-encompassing turgid love for old films, but I don't really dislike modern films either. I think that there things come along that surprise and delight me all the time in cinema, and I do like the summer blockbusters and things like that, but I like a movie like I saw Splice, the Vincenzo Natali movie. Splice is an odd name to Australians because there used to be an ice cream called a Splice here in Australia. But, yeah, a good science fiction movie, good acting, interesting stuff, good monster movie apart from anything else, and a lot of fun in that way, and with a very hard-punching ending to it. So I like that kind of surprise coming up in cinema as well. Natali's an interesting director too. There's another movie of his that I like a lot, which has two titles, one of which is Brainstorm, but the original title was Cypher, with Jeremy Northam and Lucy Liu in it. Really interesting little science fiction movie. He's been kind of creeping along making these interesting films. He did Cube, for instance, the original movie of Cube. Wrote and directed them, and really interesting stuff coming out from this guy. For instance, he started out doing art department work. He did a whole bunch of art department things before he became a director. But anything of his that comes out, he did one of the segments in an anthology movie I like called Paris Je T'aime in 2006, which is always good. I did try to watch New York, I Love You, which was kind of like a sequel to Paris Je T'aime, and I couldn't get into it. It really didn't give me anything worth my time and attention. But, let me know if there's any kind of directors or people who are kind of on the fringes of big success who really float your boat, because there are always people like that around who some people know about, some people don't, or they might not know that they might have seen the movies and enjoyed the movies, but they might not know who's involved in them. But, Vincenzo Natali is doing some really interesting stuff at the moment and has been for about a decade or more. So, I do like a good or even a bad science fiction film. I think there are, good is terrific. A science fiction film that really takes the genre somewhere new is terrific. A science fiction film so abysmally bad you've just got to love it is terrific too. But in the middle there's a whole range of science fiction films that are just ordinary. And I don't care whether something is really, really good or really, really bad, but if it's right in that ugly patch in the middle where it's kind of ordinary, any kind of movie is, you've seen a dozen times before, it's yet another rom-com with a quirky female character and a straight-laced male character who fall in and out of love and get into adventures and do all sorts of things that would have got them arrested within 2 minutes in the real world. Those kind of things piss me off and put me off and are really not my kind of thing. I think that if you're going to try, look this way, look at a movie. Consider the concept of movies. Somebody has to pay a lot of money to get even a small film made. On the human scale of you and I and our mortgages and our debts and our day-to-day expenses, movies are an immensely expensive enterprise. Unless, of course, you're making El Mariachi for $7,000. But leaving aside that kind of stuff, you've got to get a whole bunch of people with incredible talents together to make even an ordinary movie. You've got to get prop makers and costume designers and set designers and people who know how to use immensely complex pieces of equipment. People who know how to light something well. People who know how to act. People who know how to write. People who know how to coordinate every aspect of the film. People who know how to put the script together and also the shooting schedule for the script. All of this stuff, even for the most rudimentary film, you need these immense coordinations and talents there. You need to have people who will edit the film. You need to have some kind of a distribution deal. You need to have somebody to do the titles and the credits, the music, the set design and also the set decoration. You need to have people doing the continuity. You need all of these different skills, even if multiple people are doing them, you've got a very small shoot. You need to have all of this amazing dedication and talent and coordination and skill and hundreds of years between them of experience of doing all of these things to put together your movie. And given all of that, it's amazing how often they get it wrong. They have these immense enterprises and do immense things and fly people around the world and you know, basically create worlds and all that, and do a piss poor job of it. And that's the amazing thing about bad cinema, or you know, mediocre cinema, is the fact that it's such an enormous enterprise. Just getting the film made is an achievement in itself. It's an immense project completed, in a sense, getting the film to the stage where an audience can watch it. But given that you're doing all of that, and given the immense dedication, skill, time, care, effort, sweat, blood and tears that it takes, it's horrible that people do it so badly so often. And I think it all comes down to a couple of things, one of which is script. Interference in studios doesn't help either. Having the interference of people whose only consideration is money and how good they're going to look at the end of the deal is another thing. But it's such a fucked up... The only industry I can think of that's as fucked up as the movie industry is banking. Because they, like the movie industry, have certain conceits about themselves and about what they do. And so many of them don't do it well. And it's not usually the people down on the working floors that are not doing things well. And just the same way, it isn't the technicians and it isn't the people in the art department. And it isn't all of those other people that are doing a bad job. It's the people at the top that are fucking things up in either the film industry or in the banking industry, for that matter. It's a weird and horrible thing. And the studio system, for all its fascism and for all its authoritarianism back in the day, did at least have that ability to make entertaining things on a consistent basis. If you look at a studio like Warner Brothers or MGM or even Columbia, their hit rate for a successful film was a lot more than it is now. Of course, they had a few advantages, one of which is up until a certain stage, they owned cinemas, which is never a bad thing. And you're going to, and of course, they in the classic days of the studios, they didn't have television and the internet and downloads and DVDs and other things like that to compete with them. But the fact that we can watch those films now and still find them entertaining does lead to the suspicion that they knew something about making quality, even though there were singular exceptions to that. But if you have a look at the really worst movies, what people consider to be really, really bad movies, they're either made in early days by very, very small operations like Ed Wood's one, or they're made after the 1960s by really big companies and studios and things like that. What I'm trying to say here is that the hit rate on a successful film, I think, has diminished over the years. Compared to the number of films that come out, the ones that are really successful are a much smaller number. And there are probably a number of reasons why. Part of it is marketing. If people don't hear about it, they're not going to get their bums on seats. But on the other hand, word of mouth does count for a lot, particularly later on with DVD sales and viewing online and viewing through things like cable television channels. But I kind of have this weird sensation when I see a film that I know is trying to shoot for something really good, and you can kind of see where they're heading, but they'd really flub it in some way, in a big way, and really kind of fuck it up, or they're trying to cash in on a trend. And you could see where if they took another path. I mean, there's a movie like A Sound of Thunder, which was made about, you know, less than a decade ago, about time travel and dinosaurs and how they changed the universe by stepping on a butterfly, that one. A couple of things fucked that one up. One, they decided that the spectacle was all that mattered, really. And having really groovy monsters was all that mattered in the film. The other one was that the way they set up the initial premise with a pyroclastic flow coming down to destroy the area where they went back in time to hunt the dinosaurs defeats the purpose. The butterfly that they stepped on and changed the future with was going to be destroyed anyway. So, you know, basically the plot fucked up. And they decided that all they needed to have to make a good science fiction movie and a good summer blockbuster film was monsters. And that's not the case. If you watch that movie now, it's just a dog's breakfast of a film. But cinema has one real asset that it doesn't often capitalize on, but it really would need to. And that is that when we sit down to watch a film, whether it's in a cinema, whether it's on a laptop or an iPad, whether it's on a big screen at home, we want it to be a good movie. There's a lot of goodwill towards a movie as you sit down to watch it. You want to be entertained. You want it to be good. You want to be able to tell your friends about it the next day. You want to recommend it. If you've downloaded it, you want it to be so good that you will go and buy the Blu-ray. So there's an immense anticipation and immense goodwill towards a film as you're sitting down to watch it. And you want to have a great experience. But in a kind of weird sense, if you're a film buff at all, you want for the people who made the film that it be a good one. In that sense, there's a goodwill aspect there. And too often, we watch it and we think, what the fuck? And that's a horrible thing, given the immense effort it takes to make these suckers. Making a film is a large enterprise. Fucking up a film makes that effort a tragedy. I mean, yeah, it might have made money. And there are any number of really bad films that made money. Star Wars. But you want it to be one of those films that, I mean, you can't have every film be something life-changingly good, but in a deep, dark, squidgy part of our souls, there's a bit of us that wants every film we watch to be fantastic. And I think that's one of the great, lovely things about being a movie buff, the fact that we go in there wide-eyed every time, and we really want the best for the film, and we want the experience we have with it to be the best. We don't want the actors to be embarrassingly bad. We don't want to see actors put in a situation that can be perceived as humiliating for them as professionals. We don't want to, I mean, even in a movie where you see the boom come in from the top of the screen, or you see the cameraman reflected in a window and things like that, you still want the film to be good. And that's one of the lovely things about being the kind of people that we are, the fact that there's an endless kind of font of goodwill towards the stuff we watch, and that we really, really, really have a lot of regard for these things. And I suppose that in a lot of ways, and unlike sports, you want the people you support to do well. You want the other people to fall into a mud puddle and die. So sports always have that kind of duality, that antagonism towards one side or the other. But in movies, and probably in stage plays as well, though I haven't been to a stage play in way too long, we want it to be great. We want to enjoy it. We want to love it. We wish it well. And that's part of what I was talking... When I talked to Ivor about movies on the radio, and even before and after, we talk a little bit before and after we record. One of the things that we really kind of end up being one of the themes of what we talk about, apart from some very scatological things we say to each other in there, is that how does this film really work, and what does it... Yeah, why, if we're recommending it to an audience potentially of thousands of people, which the radio gig does have, what are we going to tell them about this film that'll make them watch it? And that kind of puts me in the headspace then of analysing films, not just as films, but as experiences for other people. Because with a podcast, with the radio, with anything like this, what we're doing is we're recommending. In a way, we're kind of saying to people, invest a chunk of your lifespan looking at this. And in doing so, sometimes we get it very wrong. I mean, there are films that I've gushed about that people haven't particularly liked, and that's fine too. No two people are the same, but I think it's a good thing that people do recommending things, whether it's a restaurant, a wine, a beer, a type of food, a recipe, a song, a movie. That love we have for other people, in that we will wish to share a good experience that we had with them, is a lovely thing about the human race. And having said that, I'm going to leave us on that high and philosophical note. And when I come back, I'm going to get into the feedback. A bit of Martin Denny to brighten things up, and that was on Green Dolphin Street, one of the jazz classics of which I'm particularly fond. So on to the feedback. Before I do, I've got to do a recommendation, and I've got to do a shout out to Zom and Piccolo over at Silver and Gold Podcast. They recommended a media player for me for my iPad, and it's Ace Player, it's called ACE Player. And it's pretty good. You can download your AVI files or your MKVs or whichever one you want to your iPad. And it just makes watching movies for podcasts and for other purposes as well just that little bit more convenient and portable. And I think it cost me 99 cents at the App Store, so it's worth doing. But I'll get on with the first piece of feedback. They're actually all from the same person this time, which is kind of cool. And in this case, they are from Rupert. And I'm not sure if I've played the first one before, but I will, and I'll address it. And then I'll get on to the other two.
Hey, Terry, it's Rupert again. Just digging back into some old episodes. I'd fallen a bit behind. So I'm listening to the Laura Life and Death of Colonel Blimp episode right now. Great stuff. Two of my all-time favorite films, especially Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, which is in my top 15 all-time. Just an amazing movie. great stuff. This made me think the Laura classic film sort of thing made me think of William Powell, who I'm a big fan of. I know you're a fan of. Doing some lists that on the blog, and I mentioned all that. And somebody on an upcoming list had mentioned Fashions of 1934, William Dieterle movie. And he also, Dieterle also did Jewel Robbery, which is another, I think they're both, no, I guess Jewel Robbery is pre-code and then 34 is not. But just watched Fashions of 1934, great little, William Powell vehicle with Busby Berkeley production numbers in it, and it's just surprising people. More people don't know about this one, or at least I haven't heard it talked about. Warner Archive put it out, and I bought it. And it's good stuff. But I wondered if you've seen that one or Jewel Robbery, which is also good. And if I remember correctly, I think I've seen that. And also, if you had some other obscure William Powell favorites, my best of favorites of 2011 list is going to include The Kennel Murder Case, which the Michael Curtiz movie, which I finally just saw on Netflix towards the end of 2011, and which I thought was fantastic. Wondered if you're a fan of that too. But any William Powell recommends outside of the obvious Thin Man stuff would be appreciated. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, hi, Rupert. William Powell stuff, that's a bit of a toughie because things like that are a little harder to access over here than they are over there. My favourite's pretty much, I mean, the Thin Man stuff, of course. I mean, you can't get past that stuff. I kind of like him in Mr. Roberts as well with Henry Fonda and Jack Lemmon in it. He's quite good in that too. I think it was one of his last roles, in fact. And probably My Man Godfrey. I mean, that's a little bit of an obvious choice. But I do like him in that as well, and he really does. He's one of those great actors of the time who is willing to, he has great gravitas, but he's willing to make himself look silly. I think that was one of the great virtues of William Powell. He wasn't scared of playing the clown when the role called for it in a unique way. And, it's great stuff. And if people aren't hip to William Powell stuff, you're probably the most accessible, of course, would be to start out with the Thin Man series that he and Myrna Loy did and work your way up from there. So thanks for that one, Rupert. Now let's get on to your next voicemail.
Hey, Terry, it's Rupert. Just calling in with sort of a random movie recommendation. Maybe you've already seen it. I just watched today A Thousand Clowns, Fred Coe film with Jason Robards and I think Barbara Harris. It was Zach Carlson's list of favorite older films that finally pushed this over the top for me to... He had it on his list this year, and it finally pushed me over the top to see it. And I think it's my favorite film I've seen this year. I mean, it's definitely my favorite discovery of 2012. I've been keeping track of those pretty vigilantly now. But really interesting sort of, anti-establishment character versus the establishment, but in a much gentler way than I'm used to, sort of. And it was really interesting. Martin Balsam's in it, too. Definitely really spoke to me in a certain way, I guess maybe where I'm at in my life right now. But funny, touching, sort of heartbreaking. Anyway, curious what your thoughts are. If you've seen it, then would love to hear you cover it if you haven't. Okay, thanks, Terry. Bye.
Thanks for the recommendation, Rupert. I haven't seen A Thousand Clowns, or if I have, I've forgotten it. Please, everybody go to Rupert Pupkin Speaks over at Blogspot and Rupert's lists, which I still owe him one for last year, and I am fully aware of that. Are terrific. He knows his stuff. He's incredibly intensely curious about movies, which is why we love him over here at Paleo Cinema. Thousand Clouds. Let me have a look at it up on the IMDb and see what we've got there. Jason Robards, of course, a middle-aged iconoclast doggedly avoiding the tedium of employment and conventional life, faces the prospect of losing custody of his young ward. Jason Robards, Barbara Harris, Martin Balsam, Gene Sachs, William Daniels is in it. Barry Gordon. Let's see what we've got here. John McMartin's in it. Not a large cast, but it looks like something I'd be interested in as well. So I'm going to have to locate a copy now. And I just, as I was listening to the voicemail, Rupert, put it on my list. I've got a little notebook here with a list, and I will try to acquire a copy of it. I may turn up on TCM. I'm fairly sure that it does turn up on TCM here in Australia occasionally, now that we've got a decent TCM feed here in the country. But thanks for that one, Rupert. And anybody who wants to tap into stuff, definitely Rupert's blog. It's a valuable resource. That's all I will say about it. Before I go on to the last of Rupert, which is a pun when you hear the last of Rupert. I did get a message on Facebook from Marty Cook. I did a shout out to him. He's going through a bit of a rough trot at the moment. But he said, "Hey, Terry, thanks so much for the mention of your podcast. It's really brightened my day. We are taking one step at a time. I won't go into anything more than that. But Marty, any time. We in my own half-assed and not paying attention all the time way, I am trying to build a community here, and you're definitely a part of that, mate. So all the best to everybody there, and it looks like you are coming out of the other side of the problems you've had, and I'm glad that you are. So I just wanted to get in Marty's shout-out, and if anybody else is going through a rough time at the moment, take care of yourselves. Just remember one thing, and this is what I tell everybody. This is shit you're going through. It's not where you live. Keep moving, keep going forward, and you will get out of it. Don't know how, don't know when, but it's worked for me so far. And given that I've been here for more than half a century, I must be doing something half-assed right. But let's get on with Rupert's last email. Hopefully not his last, but the last for this podcast.
Hey, Terry, it's Rupert. Just calling in to ask you about, I've been on a kick lately where I've been, and I had done this, I think, last year a little bit. I started to watch some Charlie Chan films and wondered what your thoughts were on those, if you prefer Warner Oland or Sidney Toler. I'm a Toler guy myself, I think. And so I've watched recently, I just watched Castle in the Desert, which is pretty good, and then previous to that, I can't remember, but the one I saw last month that I really liked was Charlie Chan at the Wax Museum, which feels like, and I've said this sort of before, but it feels like something that maybe John Carpenter could have watched as a precursor to The Thing. Probably not, but just has this idea that there's a bunch of people in a confined space. One of them isn't who they say they are. And people are getting killed. And so it's kind of cool. That's definitely going to be on my favorites of Discoveries of 2012 list. And I watched Last of Sheila. I'm not sure if I mentioned that in another call, but I feel like you talked about that a while ago, and I've been meaning to see it forever, and it's great. Definitely one of my top Discoveries of 2012 so far also. Just a really fantastic whodunit, great cast. I'm going to try and track down a copy of that out-of-print DVD. But hope all is well. Digging the show. Got the new one to listen to on my drive home tonight. I'll talk to you later, Terry. Bye.
Yeah, Charlie Chan, which one's the best, Warner Oland or Sidney Toler? That's a toughie because neither of them is Asian, so you've got to be careful what you say these days. But I'm going to go lateral with that one. My favourite is Peter Lorre as Mr. Moto. I mean, I've seen a few of the Charlie Chan ones, and again, they're a little hard to access here. But I think Peter Lorre as Mr. Moto is much, much more fun than any Charlie Chan. Now, please disagree if you like Rupert. No? And if people have an opinion on Sidney Toler versus Warner Oland, please put it into a voicemail. But if you're going to have a fake Oriental there, I mean, there's only three ones to really go for and one to avoid. The three to go for are Peter Lorre as Mr. Moto. Second one is probably Tony Randall in The Seven Faces of Dr. Low. And the third one would possibly, let me just think it through, Yeah, probably somebody along the lines of Victor Buono in The Silences, or one of those Matt Helm films where he played a very rotund Asian gentleman called Sung Sei. But the one to avoid, of course, is Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. So that's about it for the feedback now, and I will be back in a fortnight's time with a very special guest. They're all very special, so you can kind of edit that bit out mentally if you choose to. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves, enjoy good movies. I'm going to go off now and watch something that I would not tell anybody at all about, probably, given the fact that I have downloaded a whole bunch of Max Picasso movies from France. And he does tend to do things in rather a pornographic way. But look after yourselves, enjoy movies, send recommendations, voicemails, and all the rest of it through. And I should do the shout-outs. Sorry, I've nearly forgotten the shout-outs. Vince, Mary, Nick, and the Mob over at B Movie Cast. Silver and Gold, of course. The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, always quality. And it looks like they're getting some very, very groovy guests in the near future, so keep those guys in mind. Silver and Gold as well. Funny and silly, and it's Zom and Piccolo, balls to the wall, movie buffdom. Let's see, we have Shooting the Pooh podcast as well, The Writer and a Critic, the ladies over at Galactic Suburbia. Let me just go into my iTunes and see who else I assiduously listen to. Of course, Mail Order Zombie, of course, with Brother D. Let's see who else I've got there. He said, looking this up quickly, Bad Films Diary. Check out Bad Films Diary. Grant and Sonia are doing some nice stuff there, even though I disagree with them about just about everything they say about movies. They're worth your effort and your attention. And, of course, our friend Morris over at Love That Album podcast. Keep the faith, people, and I will be back in 14 turns of this clay and granite planet.